At InDigital, we know the public safety professionals hold themselves to a high standard. In fact, standard doesn't do it justice. In over 25 years working alongside you, carrying millions of calls over our IP networks, your dedication has inspired us. That's why our ESINet goes beyond industry standards, not only I3 compliant, but designed to adapt to future development for a network you can count on when it matters most. Learn more at InDigital.net.
Greenville County, we have 8 different places where a 911 call can be answered.
It is the largest county in South Carolina. It's a challenge.
The type of information that a telecommunicator gets from Radius Plus is location-based technology. You can see where the caller is, if they have a medical issue, if they speak a different language. They're immediately able to text to that caller in their native language. It reduces response times because it immediately gets first responders where they need to be.
Carbyne, it's multimedia. You can get text, translate to whatever language. Getting away with the legacy equipment and going into a cloud-based solution.
It's the first time in U.S. history that we have an EZNet through cloud-native call handling.
As a police officer, to have the victim go video, that's unheard of.
You're getting upgrades every month, not every year.
To schedule your free Carbyne demo, please visit carbyne.com/WTT.
If Within the Trenches has ever taught you something, opened your eyes to what it is like to be a 911 dispatcher, or has inspired you to become one, then help support us and join our Patreon. Get exclusive bonus content, one-of-a-kind swag, discounts on merchandise, ad-free early access to new episodes, and much more. To join, please visit patreon.com/WTTpodcast. And if you're an industry partner, we have something for you as well. And now, for the show.
This is Jordan, and you're listening to the Code 7 Podcast Network.
Warning. This episode contains the 3 A's of podcasting: adult content, adult language, and awesomeness. You've been warned.
Welcome to Within the Trenches, true stories from the 911 dispatchers who live them.
Hey, what's going on? This is Ricardo with the Code 7 Podcast Network, and we are about to get started with Within the Trenches, episode 441. Holy shit. I just said that, yes. Episode 441. It is amazing. I seriously never thought when I first started doing this that I would have gone this far, and that it, you know, continues to grow and build and everything. So thank you all for watching, listening, supporting, sharing, just all of it. This has been amazing. This episode is sponsored by InDigital as well as Rapid Deploy and Carbyne, and a big shout out to patrons as always for everything. We are, it's 2 days after my 41st birthday. How did I spend that birthday? Isolated in my bedroom because I am just about done with COVID. I have been dodging that bastard for 2 years now, and it finally caught up to me. And let me tell you, that was not fun. Not fun at all. I would consider myself very lucky. My symptoms were minimum, minimal rather. And, it still sucked though. It was craziness. So if anyone has gone through it or went through it in the beginning, when it very first happened, I feel you. Wow. It was something else, but we continue to move on. And, there are a lot of conferences that are still going on. We've got National NINA and APCO and a lot of state conferences in between that are going on, that some of them I'll be heading out to and recording episodes out there. So make sure to look out for some more amazing content, some excellent stories from the 911 professionals, the Thin Gold Line and I Am 911 movement. So make sure to look out for all of that. And there are audio versions of the DRT as well as open mic out there right now. And that's a perk for patrons only, but also Singing Badly in My Car. There's a new one that I put out a few weeks ago. I think I put it out on April 30th. And the song was, It's Gonna Be Me. Yeah, for obvious reasons, because it's gonna be May. That's why I had done that one as the comeback for singing badly in my car. And then I did all right. I did all right. It was a lot of fun. So if you're a patron, you have access to that. Make sure to check that out. All right. I am excited for my guest today. And this is going to be a lot of fun. We were already talking a little bit before this, and we've got a story that we're going to start out with here right off the bat. And my guest today is Erica, and she's a 911 communications specialist out of Osceola Sheriff's Department out of Florida. Yo, yo.
Hi.
How's it going?
It's going. I love the Florida stories. I forget it's not normal for everyone else.
Right. Yes. No, it's not. So this is good. So we're going to go ahead and start this right out. And I was not going to start it out this way until you mentioned it. And I thought that we've got to talk about this first, because like you said, you know, it's a Florida thing. Not a lot of people deal with this. So you had kind of mentioned as we were starting to start recording and everything and about to start this episode, mm-hmm. that there was something about a 5-foot gator, like there was a school delay or what happened?
Yeah, I was dropping off my 12-year-old in middle school, and the car line is rerouted, and I roll down the window because I'm trying to hurry up and drop her off so I can get to work. And and the guy's like, there's a situation. I'm like, okay. You know, so I follow the line, and then I see like four cops like on the sidewalk. I'm like, oh, maybe there is a situation. Okay. And then I get up to the next teacher, and she's like, come over here. You're going to reroute through here. And I'm like, what's going on? She's like, there's an alligator. I'm like, okay, how big is it? She's like, I don't know, but it's huge. I'm like, okay, thanks. I'm like, all right, bye. And, you know, tell my daughter bye. So I almost had to call my boss and tell her I was late to work because of an alligator. But I was like, no, she can just look on the CAD screen and see it. So, you know, but I guess just in Florida, we were the only ones that are late to work because of an alligator holding the elementary school hostage. I don't know.
Yeah. The gator's all wanting to get his own education and stuff, and
everybody's pissed
off about it. He's like, come
A's
on,
for
man.
Alligator.
I
just, he's right.
He's like, I'm just trying to teach you guys a lesson. I just want to say salutations. I'm like Charlotte, but you know, way bigger. So when stuff like that happens, what happens in the dispatch center? Have you taken any calls like that?
All the time.
Oh, please tell me. Yes, tell
oh my
me.
Gosh.
Tell
the
me.
Tourists are great because I guess, you know, they don't always associate alligators in Florida like we do.
Yeah.
So whenever they see one, it's automatically 911. And then, you know, we just go through general questions. Is it near a water source? Well, that's its natural habitat. So it becomes an education. And then mating season, when they make their noises, I'm not going to do that. You can look it up on YouTube.
They have I was waiting noise. For it.
Yeah. I know. I haven't practiced that.
Is it like a snorting sound or something?
No, it's more of a cry. So they'll call in because they sound like they're in distress. And they're like,
what?
Oh, it's mating season. So.
Oh, snaps.
Yeah. And then the next thing they'll throw out is, well, what about the kids? I'm like, well, just keep your kids away from the alligator. Like I feel like some of this is common sense, but you know.
That's true, right?
Yeah. I mean, that's the way to teach our kids. You know, you don't go any water where you cannot see the bottom. And even if you can see the bottom, still check it because there could be an alligator in your pool. So, because it does
right.
happen. Yeah.
Oh, man. Yeah, that is crazy. I can just imagine, you know, being in dispatch in Florida again, because that's where I started out my career was in Central Florida. And I can just imagine being in an area where there's way more gators, at least than there was when or where I was working in that area, and have, you know, tourists call and be just dumbfounded at you know, seeing a gator or something like that, and then be like, sir or ma'am, I mean, it's not just a football team. Like, they're around here.
So, and then we won't go out for just any call. And then we have to find out how big they are. So if they're more than 4 feet, we call in because, you know, not every deputy is able to trap them or, you know, catch them. So, and then a lot of times the deputy will just go on scene like, yep, that's an alligator. And then, you know, and that's all they can really do. So I guess when it gets to a school, it's a little different. But, you know, just seeing cops at a school and then, like, I don't know why the first guy didn't just say, hey, there's an alligator. We're just rerouting. Because, you know, when you hear there's a situation and see cop cars everywhere, you know, like, it gets you a little on edge. But, you know, maybe you're just always going to the worst case scenario. And then, like, okay, best case scenario, it's an alligator.
Which is funny that, that would be the best case scenario.
Yeah, it's a school. Yeah, so.
Right. Yeah, yeah. No, exactly. If it were me pulling up to a school and someone's mm-hmm. saying that there's a situation and there's, you know, a big presence of law enforcement, to me, that's like school lockdown.
Right.
You know, someone's got a weapon. You know, something crazy is going on. But I guess just as crazy is there's a gator that's holding up the line that's just like chilling there. And you're like, come on,
Florida man,
move. You got to move. And the gator's like, nah, son, I'm not going anywhere. Oh, geez, that is something else. Well, that's fun. That makes for
we've established I'm in Florida.
Yeah, yeah, you're in Florida. That's crazy.
There's any doubt.
How did you start out your dispatching career to begin with, though? It didn't start out with gators in the line, right?
Sorry, back in the beginning. That was this morning. So.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I didn't start out in Florida. I actually started out in Tennessee. I was pretty much raised there my whole life. I wasn't born there, but I was raised there. So I claim Tennessee as my home. Mm-hmm. So I was working at a water park. I'm going to school. I got my bachelor's in advertising and public relations. And then the recession hit and we got laid off. So I packed up my bags and my two cats and I headed down to Walt Disney World because the mouse is always hiring. So I figured, you know, even if I'm working minimum wage, you know, I'll just save up until I can figure something out. And then I met my now husband and he encouraged me to apply for the sheriff's office because he comes from a law enforcement background. Mm-hmm. So I had no idea what I was signing up for. I just knew $13 an hour sounded better than $9 an hour because I loved working at Disney, but just being outside in the sun on your feet, you know, the tourists. I'm like, is this what I went to school for? So I went where there was more money. So I went and I just jumped right in and I had a good time. Obviously, I stuck around for 13 years, so started a family. I'm still with my husband and we have three girls. So it's been great.
That's
so
awesome.
I claim Florida now as my home, even though I didn't start out here.
So what were some of the things, I guess, that you and your husband, I guess, were talking about during that time? So, you know, he comes from that law enforcement background and everything. Mm-hmm. What was it that he was seeing? Like, was there just kind of like your drive, your motivation? Or because, you know, as you said, he mentioned, you know, you would be good at this. So what were some of the things there, some of that, you know, conversation?
Well, my husband does sales, so he's not in law enforcement. So mm-hmm. he didn't really, you know, have an idea what the dispatch center was like, except for what he'd heard, you know, through his family, of course. So I really don't know what their opinion was of dispatch. I didn't go around and ask them because, mm-hmm. you know, I was more worried about making that $13 an hour.
Right.
In 2008,
yeah.
That was a lot of money. Mm-hmm. So, but he saw one of his friends was a deputy and his wife did it. And he's like, hey, she's doing it. So, you know, why not? And it was just kind of like, hey, you know, just see what it's about and you can make a career out of it. I'm like, you're right. During a recession, I'll never get laid off, you know, anywhere with the police. So that was a big selling point for me, was just knowing that my job was recession proof. And then now, as we know, it's pandemic proof. So.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And that's it's interesting to think that. So is this where you're at now? Mm-hmm. Is it the same place that you've been at?
Mm-hmm. I just celebrated 13 years in April. So
okay, so yeah, okay, so the whole time then. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
And the reason I ask is because when I started mm-hmm. back in 2001, it was Frostproof Police Department within Polk County.
Yeah.
The lowest paying. I don't know if it's like that now, but then it was the lowest paying county. And I remember when I started out, making $7 an hour.
I believe it. Yeah. Cause it was a different time. And
yeah. Well, and it was crazy because I was making way more working in like a factory mm-hmm. in Michigan. and I thought, well, I'm going to be, you know, dealing with lives and all this other stuff, you know, it's public mm-hmm. safety. It's probably going to be a lot more, but it didn't turn out to be that way. It was $7 an hour that I started out with. And, you know, I worked a lot of hours and everything else, but there were perks that came with it because the cost of living in that area was like nothing. So I had like this two bedroom, one bath house on a lake, and I was renting it. But because of where I worked and the landlady loved law enforcement, I think I got like $300 or $400 off. So it was only like $500 a month.
You probably thought you're
to live on the lake. Well, I told her, I said, I dispatch. And she goes, well, you're part of the entire team and everything.
Aww,
and,
that's awesome. And
yeah, it was really cool. So there were a lot of perks and everything else that came with it.
I bet it's not $300 anymore. House on the lake. Yeah.
No, probably not. No, I've gone by there and it's completely different. But it was cool to start out like that. And it's just funny to compare too on, you know, some of the money and stuff. And I always tell people we don't do it for the money, because the money... In some places, the money is pretty good. In other places, it's not. But either way, you know, we're not there for the money. So, you know, for you, did you get a chance before you went and applied or anything to do like a sit-along or anything like that?
I did. They let us come in and do observations so we can see what we were getting into. And I just remember the girl I was sitting with, her name was also Erica, and she was later my trainer on the floor. She kept asking if I had any questions, and I think I was just overwhelmed. I really didn't have any questions, and I probably just looked like a deer in headlights, like, nope, no questions. And I had all the questions, but just I didn't know where to start. So it was just really cool getting to see all the moving pieces behind the scenes. And, you know, I'm very analytical, so I did have a lot of questions, but I guess I didn't want to ask them and, you know, be that person. But you know, but now hindsight, I realize that we actually like that when people do ask the questions. So,
right.
So, but then I could go into the interview and say, yes, I got to observe it. And then, but yeah, I started the job, I think, just for the stability and having the benefits and just knowing that, you know, I would always have this job. And I love the idea of night shift. So, cause I'm a night owl. So that was really fun. You know, and then I saw how many people didn't want to do it. So, okay. Yeah.
So when you were sitting there during that sit along, was there stuff that actually happened? And I asked because there were a lot of times when I was in dispatch and we would have people come in to do a sit along, nothing would happen. And they would say, you know, I can do this. We're like, no, it gets busier than this. I swear to you.
Right. As soon as you leave, it's going to get busy.
Right. Yes.
I don't remember anything that sticks out. I think it was just her going over all the systems and the equipment and just seeing exactly how many computer monitors it really is. I thought that was really interesting, because I think a lot of people's perception is just the, you know, the officers have one MDC, so they have one computer screen. So that must be what we all have. But then when you come up to the dispatch floor at our agency, we easily have six screens. So at a radio position, and then supervisor, there's even more. So it's, yeah. So I really like that. There's always something to look at, because you know, I joke that the formula for a dispatcher is like a little bit of ADHD and a little bit of trauma to make you funny, and then like that's the perfect dispatcher. So I guess that's why it just clicked. I'm like, oh, I can look over here and look over there, and you know,
the sprinkle of technology and a sprinkle of this and that. You're right.
Yeah, details.
Yeah. Shovel in some of that dark humor, and you are good to go.
Exactly. That's the most important, I think.
Yes. So you end up getting in there, you know, you get this job and everything, and you start training. What was the training like? Like, do you remember, was there, is it kind of the same way that it is now, or, you know, were there different phases? How did it work exactly?
Well, when I started, we had the several weeks in the classroom. So I'm a good test taker, fortunately. So I know I studied, I took everything home. And for some reason, I really stressed about the TTY abbreviations, you know, in case someone deaf were to, like, you know, call in on the, like, I was really worried about that. And so I come back to my instructors and like, you don't have to worry about that. You don't have to memorize all the abbreviations. I'm like, but what if someone needs, you know, and I need to talk to them and they can't communicate. And so I was focusing on, you know, what I thought was important, but then, you know, going onto the floor and seeing the big picture and how, you know, yes, we have to be ready for those types of callers, but that's not the, you know, the large majority of your calls, and just seeing, you know, and then the alligator calls, and, you know, there's just everything. So that's what keeps it interesting, is, you know, you don't know what you're going to answer. And then I think just us dispatching animal control, it has funny stories, and it's also can be a pain sometimes, but, you know, but then I couldn't tell a funny story, you know, about animal control. Cause whenever people ask what's the funniest or what's the craziest call, I always go to the animal stories. because they really don't want to know what the craziest call is. They just say
For sure.
I found out one time the hard way. I told them my craziest story, and then just the look on their face, like, all right, note to self, don't ever tell that story again to someone who's not a 911 because... Yeah,
they might not be able to hack it. I remember doing the same thing two or three times, actually. And it was always when I would go to get my hair cut because, you know, people are always wanting to, you know, start a little bit of conversation going on so that it's not just silence, you know, and awkwardness. Yeah. But for me, personally, like when I'm getting my hair cut, if the person doesn't talk at all, I'm in heaven. And not that I don't want to talk or anything. It's just, to me, when someone is cutting my hair, it's almost like a massage. Like, it's relaxing. But a lot of times someone would ask, like, what do you do for a living? And I would sit there for a moment and be like, should I
look
say?
Around the room? Like, is he,
yeah, like, audience. Read the room. Yes.
Right. Yeah.
And then, you know, I would say, and they would immediately go, that must be such an amazing job. And like, yeah, it is. And then the question would come out. Yep. So what's your craziest call? So yeah, I would do the same thing. I always give the funny ones, but then there's two or three times where I gave an actual crazy one and they're just, oh.
Right?
You know, cutting my hair. And then I'm just kind of looking at them like, are you okay? Like, I wasn't expecting that. And I was like, what do you expect?
I know.
Like, it's 911, man. You asked for the craziest. I decided to give that to you.
Yeah.
And I apologize because now you're going to have nightmares like I do.
Like, I tuck the crazy back in. Like, sorry. You meant funny, not traumatic. I'm, now
yes.
I know.
Yeah. Like, oh, my bad. My bad. I have issues.
Yeah.
Oh, man. So, where you work at, how many people are on the floor at a time?
Well, I love the starting out with, well, when we're fully staffed, but we have about 15 people. So in a perfect world, if we were fully staffed, we would easily need 20, I think. But yeah, we have about 15 or so. So it can fluctuate depending on the trainees that we have, because we're always, you know, training someone. So, but.
So like 15 per shift is what you're saying?
Yeah.
Snaps. Okay. So for me, working at the central dispatch for the county, for Allegan County, our minimum was 3.
Oh my gosh.
Yes. Yes. For, I don't know, 160, 170,000 people in the county or something like that. But yeah, for you guys, definitely way bigger. So when you're sitting at your console, are you able to like just kind of peek up over and see a cube farm, like see everyone working and you can hear them and everything?
Absolutely.
Are you broken up into different sections, like, you know, law enforcement or fire radio or anything like that?
Yeah, we're exactly like that. We are primary PSAP for the sheriff's office, and then we have the secondary PSAP for the fire department. But we can hear everyone and, you know, pick up each other's phone lines depending on the type of training we have. But then we'll say, let me transfer you to fire rescue. And then you're just transferred to the person sitting next to you just because of the way it's set up.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, and then we're like little, you know, prairie dogs looking up, like, who's here? And we get the door open, and then you go back down.
Like a periscope?
Yeah. And then depending who it is, you got to warn each other.
Oh, man. Yes. No, that's interesting. One of the dispatch centers here locally for Fort Wayne, Allen County, they have, I think the last time I was there, which is a few years ago now, they were staffed at like 88 people, and they would have almost 30 on at a time, I think it was. Wow. And it's like a little city up there. They're like on the 6th floor of this big ass building, and it is gorgeous, but it looks like its own little mini city in there.
Oh, that's so cool. Yeah, I love visiting different PSAPs when I get a chance, just to see how we're the same but different.
Yes. One of the things that I noticed is that every dispatch center has its own chair graveyard.
That's true, yeah.
I don't know what it is. I don't know what it is. Everyone has their graveyard, the chairs that people just cannot let go of because it has a certain groove, or it fits to your ass differently, or the armrest. It never fails. There's always an armrest that looks like someone was like picking out the.
That is so true. Maybe they just need more like fidget toys or something, because maybe that's just a nervous habit. I don't know. But
It could be. I don't know. It's hilarious, though. When I ended up going to the private side of 911, and I was traveling around to different centers and training dispatchers on text for 911 and backup phone systems and stuff, that was one of the things that I would notice immediately was the chair graveyard. And I would look and I'd be like, that one must be a supervisor's. They're like, how did you know? I'm like, look at how it's destroyed.
Oh my gosh. That's great. That's the ultimate test. He knows.
Yes.
Well, we're lucky. Yeah. Our wellness department had some extra money left over because they didn't spend it all through the pandemic. So I suggested yoga ball chairs. So we've been test driving some yoga ball chairs. They actually have the back, so you don't just fall off the yoga ball. So I'm excited for us to get those because, you know, one, they're cheaper, and two, it's just something, you know, it's a good way to, you know, just stay awake and while you're sitting there and, you know, work on that core strength. So
that is very true.
Never know until you ask. Yeah. And it's only like $70 compared to how much are dispatch chairs. So
a lot.
So yeah, of course. Yeah. So management's like, yes, let's try these out. And, you know, especially because it's not coming out of our budget. So
true.
So I asked for 20 and they let us test drive 5 and I think they're going to buy us 5 more. So I'm like, okay, damn. Next time I should ask for more. And then, you know, so I mean, that's a great number because we're not going to use them all day, every day. So we'll rotate through them.
That's true. We had some probably 2009, 2010. They didn't have a backing on them. It was just the ball.
Yeah.
And I remember someone was like, dude, you got to try this. It actually works. I was like, okay. So I'm sitting at radios trying to do it. And all I'm doing is like bouncing up and down. And I always use the pedal. So it started screwing me up because I'm bouncing. And then I would hit the pedal and I'm like, oh, shit. And then I would get a message on the MCT saying, I heard that. I'm like, oh gosh. Like, dang it. Like, I can't use this ball over here.
That's funny. Yeah. I think we've had a few people fall off the ball before we got the chair. So that was kind of like, and it's safer.
Right.
Like, yes. It's like, how do you get hurt in dispatch? You know, workers comp. Like I fell off the chair, but
yeah. Yeah. Fell off this.
Like, awesome, we have to have a seatbelt for them or something.
When you ended up getting in there and, you know, you're going through training and everything, do you remember your first call or any of your earlier calls?
I must have blocked it out because I really don't. I think it was just a combination of nerves and, you know, training and stumbling through to get through it. And then just having a trainer right there next to you the whole time. That's just how you get through it, you know, until you can make it on your own. So I really don't remember my first one. I could probably go back and look, but I'd be kind of curious. Of course, we don't have the audio anymore, but that would be true. Great to see, you know.
What do you remember as being, you know, something that you kind of struggled with earlier on in the beginning? So, for example, for me, one of the things that I struggled with, even though I had 3.5 years of experience under my belt already, when I went back home to Southwest Michigan and worked for the county dispatch, everything was different. And it seemed like almost as if the lingo was a little bit different as well, you know, some of the terminology and stuff. So for me, one of the hardest things was getting on the radio and saying exactly what my trainer wanted. Like I wanted to do such a good job that it would hinder me to the point where, you know, someone would key up and all I needed to say was 10-4 or copy 10-24, you know, and I would look at my trainer and say, what do you want me to say? And they would say, just say 10-4. 10-4. And then I'd be like, yeah, I did it. but it was because like I wanted to do that well. Like I wanted to say exactly what they were used to hearing, but also what my trainer wanted me to say too. And I remember she would say, Ricardo, you just got to kind of loosen up. Like, I know that you know what to say, but you're just afraid to say it because you don't want to mess up. I'm like, no, you're right. You are exactly right. Yeah. I don't want to mess up. And I don't want them to laugh at me, which was fine. I had to get over that shit because it was, you know, it was just messing me up more by just not going through. So it took a little bit for me to be like, yeah, I don't care. I'm just going to go ahead and do it. If I feel like it's right, I'm going to go with my gut. And if it's wrong, they're going to tell me it's wrong and it'll be okay. This is why I'm learning. So for you, was there anything that you felt like you kind of struggled with in the beginning that, you know, took a little bit to kind of push through?
I think for me, when I would get those in progress calls on radio, my adrenaline would just shoot up. I'm like, oh, you know, the pucker factor where your butthole puckers. You're like, oh, God, right. What did I do? Yeah. So then it would come across in my voice and I'd be really excited to get it out because I just want to hurry up and get it out. And then I'm like, okay, that's going to get them all excited if you start. So then I had to start talking slower. And to me, it sounded so slow. But then I realized that actually sounds normal to them. But right. I don't think anyone ever 10-9 me or asked me to repeat. But then I realized, well, they also have it on the NBC, so they probably didn't want me to repeat it. They could just look at it. So.
Right. Yes.
But yeah, I would just get so excited, like, oh, this is a good one. Here we go. And then, you know, you can't let that show in your voice. So it was, and then that and being just analytical, like, and not that I was questioning authority, but I just really wanted to understand, where is this coming from? Why are we doing it this way? How did it make sense for me in order to, you know, believe it and then trust my gut because I knew it was right. And then when you have a trainer who is not like that, it's funny looking back, but yeah, my old supervisor, she still works here. She's like, no, you were very analytical. So then I became a trainer and then I eventually a training coordinator. So I felt, you know, at the time, yeah, I was a pain in the ass, but you know, later on, I think if you take someone and, you know, answer all their questions and they can do amazing things with it. So yeah, I mean, I guess I was the hard one to train because I was analytical and then I talked really fast. And then also, you know, cause I've raised three girls the course of my career, you know, anytime I had pregnancy brain, that would be really hard. And then it would get blamed on that. And then, you know, so the struggle was real.
Oh man. I remember working with a few coworkers that, you know, they were, they were pregnant and stuff, and yeah, they'd be on the radios and they would say something and then they would look at me and they would say, did I just say that? I'm like, yeah, you did. You want me to play it back? And I would start laughing and they'd say, no, please don't rub that in my face.
I can really, yeah. Sometimes your brain works faster than your mouth and then you'll switch words and then you're like, I can't believe I said that. Yeah.
Right.
And that's the one time the deputies were listening.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, because then they'll end up getting a hold of the audio and they'll see you later on. You're like, hey, check it out. And they'll play it on their phone or something. Right? And there it is. Like, damn it. Yes. About how long do you think it was in the beginning before you felt like you really had a hold of this job? For me, I would say it was about 3 years that, you know, it took for me. I mean, again, I'd already had that experience, but working at the smaller police department, it was completely different. So feeling like I really had, you know, a solid hold of this position, this work and everything, it was probably about 3 years at the Central Dispatch where I was like, yeah, like fully, you know, I was confident already. I was doing what I was supposed to be doing. I was going through protocols. And of course, there's always those calls that still make you kind of nervous, but it probably was about 3 years before I felt like solid.
That sounds about right for me too. Yeah. Just because anytime you learn something and then the next day it changes, you know, you start to wonder, well, what else is changing? And then, you know, policies always change, technology always changes. So eventually, you know, you become, you know, the go-to person when you become a trainer and you have someone asking you all these questions and then you realize the way you can explain to them, either I know it or I don't. So I think it takes several years to feel confident in your answer to someone else because I'm the same way. Like if I explain something to a trainee, I need to have a thorough understanding and then I can simplify it for them. I don't have to give them the expanded version, but the best analogy I've heard is if you can explain something to a 5-year-old, then you really understand the subject matter. So I try to look at things like that. If I understand it and then I can break it down into smaller pieces for someone else, for them to understand on that beginner level, then I understand it. So it does. It takes years. So nice. Then, you know, once I, you know, would complete a phase of training, I would always, okay, what's the next phase? What's the next phase? So then there was a promotion available for the fire side. And so I gladly, signed up for, because I wanted to learn more. I felt I knew the law side, and then I jumped over to the fire side. So even though we're in the same room, it's the same but different. And then I had a whole new understanding and appreciation, and then I could share it with the law people. And then, I think it was nice that we had a few cross-trained people, because out of about 80 of us for a while, there's only about 5 of us that were cross-trained on everything. And so there kind of was that, divide, even though we didn't want there to be that, there always was, because you're always thinking, well, I'm doing more because I'm doing this. Well, I'm doing more because I'm doing this. But then when you have those cross-trained people saying, listen, that position sucks, but that position really sucks over here. So then you have a different perspective. Like, listen, I know, because I've done them all. And then, so I think that does kind of help. Just always learning, what else can I do? What else can I do? So
that's probably one of the best parts about this job, right? Is that you're always learning every day, no matter what it is. It could be something very, very small, but still sometimes those very small things that you learn end up turning out to be big things later on in your career. That's what I miss about the job as well. Just a lot of that stuff. Every day was different. The incident type, incident types that would come in the same, but the situation was always different. And I've said this once, but I'll say it again, and I will always say it. The moment that you think you have taken the craziest call, the most outrageous call, the whatever call, hold my beer. That call ends up getting escalated even more, and you're just sitting there like, this is real life. Like, this is going on right now. This is crazy.
That's true. And I get drawn to news articles like that, especially anything that involves, a PSAP or a law enforcement agency. Cause then I wonder, well, what would we do if that happened here? And you kind of go down the rabbit hole of, we can't say it'll never happen because it happened to them, So,
right.
And that's where a lot of training, I think, comes from, is because like, oh crap, what would we do? And then you realize, well, we're not ready for that. And then you start, coming up with plans for something. So it's good and bad, but to always be aware of what's going on. So I think it's occupational hazard. Yeah. You're always aware of every possible outcome because, you're like Dr. Strange. You have to like kind of look through and like, okay, what can happen? What's the best possible outcome? The multiverse.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, exactly. Yes. What was it that you think, well, a couple things here. So one, at what point do you think it was where you kind of realized to yourself, like, this is the job that I'm in the place where I'm supposed to be, like, this is my calling. Like a lot of people say that. They say that once they've gotten into dispatch, whether it be, because it was paying well, and they wanted a job that paid well, or others wanted to be in dispatch almost as a stepping stone to get into law enforcement, or something like that. A lot of folks end up saying this was my goal in the beginning. As soon as I got into dispatch though, it got into my blood and I knew that this was where I was supposed to be. Did you ever have kind of like that aha moment?
I did, and I don't think I've really ever told this story. So just between me and you, I was actually embarrassed when I worked here in the beginning, and it's not the agency itself. It was because I had literally just graduated college, and I had started out at some advertising firms, and I'm like, yeah, I want to do creative. I'm going to, take the advertising world by storm, and, you have all these, glorified ideas of what your career is going to be. And then just being laid off from one job, packing up and moving to another state, and then starting at another place, I was a little embarrassed because I felt like I was behind where my classmates were. And it took a few years for me to realize, like, wait a minute, I'm doing a job that they probably can't do, and because I actually heard some, I don't know if this is true or not, but I've heard that only about 1% of the population can do dispatch. And then I realized, the way training is and the way people come in and they come and go, like, that's probably true. So that made me realize, like, oh, I'm actually pretty special because I'm doing something that a lot of people can't do. So I had the aha moment. I think it took me a few years being here and just getting over my ego and realize, because you're paying back student loans with a paycheck that's not your career. So that was kind of hard to digest. But I mean, you got to swallow your pride and do what you got to do. And then I look at things a lot differently. And then just, because there is so much technology, I decided to embrace that part of it. And so I love learning not just on the user end, but in the back end. Like, how can we, you know, we configure this program? How can we go in and, you know, manipulate it to do what we want it to do? So I love that, because not only having the dispatch experience in addition to the technical side, like that's even getting smaller and smaller percentage wise. So, so I realize I am very lucky. It's such a specialty area that I don't think a lot of people could do, but.
So listening to you say all of this, which is amazing.
I didn't say
well.
Too fast, because I was getting excited.
No. This is good.
You're Skepta.
Yes. I was listening. would you say that, you know, some of this stuff as well is kind of the reason that you ended up wanting to move forward, you know, and being, you know, a trainer and all this other stuff? And the reason I ask is because a lot of people that I've spoken to, and I think I said this in the class that Sarah and I did that you and Yasmin were in, but it seems like a lot of people who move up, it has to do, let's just say training wise, they wanted to be a trainer because they had an amazing trainer and they wanted to be able to mold those new folks that are coming in. Or on the same side of that coin, they had a trainer that was a shit trainer, and they don't want others coming in to ever have to experience what they experienced. So they wanted to take their experience and make it better for everyone. What was that? What was it like for you? Like, what was that kind of your motivation to be a trainer as well? And just kind of, I guess, the same way I said it, kind of mold those that are coming in.
Yeah, I think just always knowing the why behind something, that kind of, you know, pushed me to figure it out. Because, you know, I'm not one of those people who can say, well, this is how we're going to start doing it starting now. And like, okay, no, but why? Like, did something change? Well, why did that change? Well, what's the policy on it? Can I see where that is? Like, I need to understand the why behind it. So just, you know, and the best way to do that is to jump in and just learn it for yourself. And then now you can teach others, because I think if I wasn't doing this job, maybe I would be teaching, and I don't know what level, but it'd probably be older. So I just have I'm really comfortable talking to my peers, and I do talk to younger kids because I do public education. And then so it's fun taking such a big concept of 911 and then breaking it down for young children. So even my 3-year-old's like, call 911 if you need police or the firefighters, you know. So yeah. And then, you know, my kids were always the ones that knew their address and their phone number first, you know, before all their classmates, because it's just something that's so important that people don't realize. But yeah, I think just that drive to always want to do better and never settle, you know, because I don't know. It's just something, because I think when I originally moved down to Florida, my plan was, okay, I'll become a resident, and then I'll go to grad school, I'll get my master's, and then, you know, I'll move on. And so I knew I always wanted to better myself, but then I had no idea what the 911 world was until I jumped into it. And then now there's a whole nother level of education and experience and technical requirements that I'm like, you know what, maybe I don't need my master's. Maybe I can go for the professional certifications, because that's going to be more of a benchmark in this industry than a degree. So having a degree is great. I don't regret that at all. But now I've just kind of changed what I want to do with my education.
Man, that is awesome. You were doing some excellent, excellent work. Well done.
Oh, thank you. Very well done.
So here's a question, and I ask this because you mentioned, you know, your kids are the ones who know, you know, got to call 911 and have their information, all this other stuff. So I have to ask, how has this job changed you?
Oh my God. I'm a super paranoid parent. So yeah, like as soon as we moved into our new house, that, you know, it had to have the pool fence put up. My husband already knew, like, before the ink was dry when we closed, like he had the pool guy waiting to, you know, start installing it. We had to have the proper drain covers because of, you know, the entrapment that can happen, and then just having the layers of protection. So yeah, so anything that can happen is, you know, I've already thought about it, and then I try to have a solution for my kids, because I know they're not just going to listen to a parent say, no, you can't do that. And then I try to have, you know, an explanation why, or try to give them a safer way to do it, because, you know, if, you know, anytime they're on their bicycle, they have to wear a helmet, you know, so it's scary, but, you know, because you don't want to lose something so precious, because you can see in the blink of an eye, it does happen. Like we do monthly fire drills. I have them lay in their bed where they have to practice getting up and opening their window, and not just talking about it, but they actually physically open the window, because, you know, to me, just the thought of something that's so preventable that, you know, if we had just gone over something, you know, just I couldn't fathom it. So I think they're used to me right. being a little neurotic, but but I think it's just because I love them. So I don't know if other dispatcher parents are like that. That might be a good, you know, research to look into. How is it, you know, what kind of parent are you as a dispatcher? Because I think it definitely overflows into your personal life.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
It's hard to just stop as soon as you come into the door, you know, and so, you know, my smoke alarms, the batteries are up to date, you know, I got carbon monoxide alarms in the bedroom. So.
Yes. Yeah. There'll be a couple times, you know, when my kids are just kind of looking at me and they're like, Dad, I'm like, no, right? You know what I used to do. I spent 13 and a half years taking phone calls from kids doing different shit.
Yeah.
I'm telling you this because I don't want you to get hurt. Like,
right.
Like, you know, they do, you know, all kinds of fun stuff and everything already. But if I see them that they're getting into a spot where something might go down that's similar to maybe a call I took once, I'm like,
right?
No.
Yeah. The alarms start going off in your head. Like, wait a minute, where have we seen this before? Yeah. I think now it's different. Now that they're getting older, because I have 10 and 12 and 3. So I know the older ones are having, you know, different conversations with classmates and, you know, they're learning about the outside world. So yeah. Not just mom's scary point of view because of 911, but, you know, they're hearing the real world through their friends. And so just having that, those conversations about social media. And then if you have any questions, come to me, like, don't be afraid to come to me and then just talk to them about what's real. And then I'll even point them to other trusted adults, you know, like luckily the SRO, she has a really great relationship with them. And she used to work in child crimes. And I'll tell them, you know, if you don't want to talk to your parents, please go talk to the SRO because she has a background in that. There's a whole division dedicated to child crime. So it's it's not just mom being paranoid, you know, because I can imagine how kids would get together. Yeah, my mom won't let me do that either. My mom, well, they don't know. No, really. Like, I know, and I'm going to refer you to another resource because, you know, if you don't believe me, at least go to her. Right. So it's scary, but, you know, at the same time, it's very rewarding because I think they're turning into awesome little people. So
yes.
Hopefully I don't have to pay for too much therapy for them. But, you know, you want to be well balanced and safe.
Yeah. Yeah, it's funny. I remember coming home a few times after a long shift, you know, 16 hours or whatever.
Oh my God.
And it had been hell, you know, the whole time, and, you know, taking calls for the, you know, kids that had passed or whatever. And then seeing my little boy, who at the time was like 4, maybe 5. And I would give him a huge hug to the point where I would hear him go, and I would go, oh,
that's when you let go.
yes. And he would go, are you okay, Dad? I'm like, yeah, Dad's okay. Dad just had a long, hard day.
That was more for you than for him. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. And, you know, I talk to him about that now sometimes. He's 18 now. He's going to be graduating in a few weeks from high school. And, you know, we talk about it. And he goes, there was a long time where I just thought you didn't want to, you know, kind of just didn't want to be here because you were always at work and stuff. But now that I'm older and I've read what you do and what you've been through and hear you talk about all this stuff and I've heard you and Dare to Be Great and Be the Difference and all these other calls conferences, rather, these sessions that you do, he goes, I know that it was for a greater purpose, and it was also for us to be able to live. And he's like, thank you. I have a deeper appreciation for the work that you do and that you did. I'm like, oh,
that's
you're gonna make me cry, bud.
Oh, I didn't think about that perception from a child. Like, oh, they don't want to be here because they're always gone. But yeah, and then it's, you know, when they get older, they have to start, you know, you have to start telling them more truths, or else they're going to start thinking whatever, you know, if you don't fill in that void for them, they're going to fill it in themselves. So yeah, I think that's like when I go to a conference, same thing. I'll tell the older ones, you know why mommy's going, right? And I'll kind of talk about my session. Like, oh, that's so cool. And like, oh, I don't want you to go, but that's so cool. So
right.
they're kind of torn, but you know, I just explain that, you know, I'm just teaching other people, you know, I like to go out and teach and, you know, and I get to learn too. I think that's important for them to see that even as an adult, we don't stop learning.
Because, right. Yeah.
Because you're a kid. Yeah. You're learning because you're told to be in school. But as an adult, you have to go out and seek it sometimes to get those extra opportunities.
Exactly. Now, And so throughout your career, your 13 years now, do you have, and of course, this is only if you feel comfortable sharing, but do you have any calls that that stick with you?
Yeah, there's always going to be those that kind of play through your head. Just being in Central Florida, unfortunately, the drowning rates, like it's horrible here. Like it's something that, you know, you're not going to see necessarily advertised on a billboard because it's not, you know, sexy, come to Florida, you know.
Right.
But at the same time, like I think there is more of an approach to letting people know about it. But yeah, I think all the drowning calls, like they stick, because even though I'm not in the frontline role anymore, I'm more of the support staff in the back office. Like we still have to listen to those audios because, right, you know, the media still wants them, you know, homicide detectives still need them. The health department needs them, or DCF. So like we still have to listen to it. And, you know, and we know that our frontline workers are going through a lot, and then just having, you know, the added stress, because a lot of our dispatchers are parents, you know, it's hard not to picture your child on the other end of the phone when they're, you know, you're having to do CPR. So, it's something, cause I used to, be a lifeguard, and then I was a lifeguard instructor. I did all the water park stuff, you know, going through school. And our motto was zero drownings. And so to come from that industry into this industry where it's, you know, we have to joke that, oh, it's drowning season, just because you have to mentally prepare, okay, the calls are going to start coming in. And that's really hard. And like, sometimes I refuse to accept it just because I know that, you know, knowledge is power. And if we can just, you know, get the word out and then have more a preventative, you know, proactive approach, then maybe we could save all these little lives. Cause you know, it just breaks your heart thinking that this family comes to the happiest place on earth and they leave with one less family member. Like, that's not fair, you know, right. And it's easy to blame the parents and say, well, they should have been watching their kid. Listen, three-year-olds are ninjas, you know, it's
yeah, they are.
I used to be a great parent too. And then I had kids, you know, anything they can get into or get out of, they can. And then especially when you're not in your home, because your home might be baby-proof, but you go on vacation and it's not baby-proofed. Because, yep, you know, no one's thinking, you know, oh, there might be a toddler here, better put a lock on this. And so they slip out so fast. And it's easy to assume that someone else is watching because you're out of your routine. So I think it's those hard, uncomfortable conversations that have to be made. And so, like, when I go on vacation with my kids, like, I really don't relax because I know that's the time that it's you need to be more aware. And so that's, you know, why I joke. Because I know if I go to the beach or go to a pool, then, you know, if I don't pay attention, you know, even for 20 seconds, something horrible could happen.
Right.
But then it's just finding that balance of, okay, well, what can we do to educate and make it more preventative? So that way this doesn't happen, because, you know, it's going to keep happening until, you know, a huge movement happens. So, but that's why one reason why I started going to the conferences was to get answers. Like, are there any other regions, you know, having to worry about this, or is it just unique to Florida? Because, you know, we are like the number one vacation destination. So maybe we don't have any other answers out there because we're, you know, the number one source. Mm-hmm. But by going out and networking, I've met a lot of great people, different people in different industries that I might not have talked to, just to not only try to do something about the drownings, but also help with the mental health of the dispatchers, because that's, you know, they go hand in hand. You know, anytime the drownings go up, you know, the dispatcher mental health is always a concern too, because we just don't get that closure. So with the near drownings, we know it could very easily turn into something worse later. So I think even just something that seems very minor, you know, we have to, you know, you have that same level of stress that's going on. But I recently did a research poster where I, for Navigator, I gathered all the data from all 67 Florida counties. I could probably name them by now, because I sent a public records request to each agency. And just the old fashioned way, I said, hey, can I have all your CAD records? And I asked for the last 3 years of data for drownings and near drownings, because I wanted to show how the increase right after COVID, you know, is how it's affecting agencies and, you know, the mental health of everyone. So it was very interesting, I think, just having the results. And then now they're able to take this and do something with it. You can show, hey, there's a visible trend that's occurring here. We need to focus on this and figure out what other efforts can we do. And then I'm actually going to work and turn into an article for the publication. So I'm excited about that, having a research article. So it was just something I never would have thought of on my own, but it's just something small became something else. So it's been really cool seeing how when you have an idea or a thought and you look for answers, you find, you know, all these other great opportunities and, you know, so.
Well, and then you find a lot of like-minded individuals as well who are wanting to know the information that you've got out there. And those are the ones that end up spreading that further to get even more people talking about it and networking
Absolutely.
With you, and it just continues to build and build and build. And like I said before, you've been doing a lot of great work. And I think a lot of times our great work also comes from our experience and a lot of different things that, that we've dealt with, whether it be life or work experience, whichever, mm-hmm. you know, we're able to bring that to the table and wow. build upon that by doing like what you're saying here, you know, doing that as well, doing this research and having all this different data and having these people come together and learn so much more. You know, you've also been developing some sessions and everything. So this is a good segue actually into this as well. Now mm-hmm. that we've heard a lot more about you and everything, which has been awesome. So what are some of the sessions that, that you have that you're, I guess I could say that you're kind of going on tour with a little bit with some of these conferences, which is awesome because this is good information, and I've heard nothing but good things about your sessions.
Oh, thank you. I actually started last year, mm-hmm. my first time ever presenting at a conference, so that was crazy. I just thought, fuck it, why not? You know,
yeah,
that's been our motto, just try it. You know, so I presented for the first time in Vegas. I got to present on. The morale committee that we have at our agency, because I was visiting another agency and they had a dispatcher suicide because just morale had just gotten so bad there. And I decided like, we can't ever let it get that bad where, you know, someone feels that lonely. So it was something that I was able to, you know, obviously bring other people on board with, and, you know, it was slow at first, but the session itself is just showing how you can start small and then just get a little bit bigger and get a little bit bigger. Until eventually you're able to start making, you know, these ripples of change throughout your comm center. And then we've actually been able to make changes throughout our community. So it's been great. And so I think the main goal is just to be inspiring and to motivate people and to believe, like, if you think something needs to change, then you do it. You know, don't wait for mm-hmm. someone else to start making these changes because you're going to be waiting right. forever, you know? So that was exciting being able to do that. And I was very passionate about it. So it felt very natural and comfortable talking to people about it. It wasn't like I was teaching, you know, something kind of boring and, you know, oh, we got to be here. It was just a different energy in the room. It was like in service, but people wanted to be there.
Yeah.
So I've actually done that one, like three times, three different conferences. So that's been great. And every time I go back, I'll update it and refresh it with some more because we've been able to add more to it. So that's what's really cool is that I might be, you know, recycling a session, but now I'm adding to it because so much has happened since the last conference. And then just, it's always evolving. Another one is we're doing things a little bit differently with our civilians. So when they come into law enforcement, there's that huge transition period where, you know, if they came from a bank or a dentist office, it's culture shock and they don't know what to expect. So Yasmin and I, we talk about different ways that we can kind of acclimate them into our world. We're still civilians, but we're in the law enforcement world. Mm-hmm. And then we get a lot of great feedback because it's not that too out of the box. It's just something that's a little different that other people might not be doing. If we throw in 2 weeks of observations during the orientation, and that's made a world of difference of how fast they're able to do their CAD skills. They're able to see the big picture and not just imagine it sitting back in a classroom. Well, what is this going to look like? They've already seen it. And then when they come back into the classroom, they're a lot faster. And so it's been great for speeding up training. And then we're already working on some sessions, hopefully for next year, because we want to help people get into presenting themselves, because we realize there's a lot of people we've met through conversations like, yeah, I would love to present at a conference one day. And we're like, well, why don't you? And
right.
You have
yes.
all these reasons. And okay, well, you're always going to have a reason not to do something. Just do it. You know, so we hope to, you know, even though we're beginners ourselves, like we hope to just have enough, you know, motivation for the beginners to be able to do it. Cause I think it's a little intimidating when someone with the word doctor in their name, you know, talks about, you know, everything, but no, if it's someone who just started themselves, I think that would be a great motivational tool. Like, hey, they just did it. Why not? So, but it's the reward is just, I can't describe it. It's something that you'll never, you know, be able to get out of a, like a training class back home. It's just when you go out and meet new people, it's a different energy.
Yes, exactly. The networking alone at a lot of these conferences are just, there's nothing like it. I mean, don't get me wrong. As someone who's been doing a lot of virtual events as well, I dig those, but it just, it doesn't do the same as in person. And, you know, whenever I've gone to in-person conferences and stuff, and I've spoken to folks or just meeting new people or whatever, I usually ask them, and I'll say, are you here with the group? And a lot of times they'll say, yes. And I'll say, well, leave your group. And they'll be like, what? And like, not like fully or anything, but just kind of get out of, of your group, or have your group go and meet other groups or whatever, because you need to, you know, take advantage of this time to learn from others, because they might be doing or dealing with the same issue, but, you know, working on it in a different manner, you know, a different way. And that's what's good about a lot of these conferences, especially when you go and you either present or you're just going to different sessions and just learning different things. And doing a session for those who are wanting to get into it but don't know what to do, that's good stuff right there, because there's a lot of people who have done some of the virtual stuff who they don't know how it works. So then, you know, go through like a little mini boot camp. And you know, a lot of that stuff can apply to in-person ones too, but that is good, because you're never going to know if you don't just do it. So I'm glad that like you and Yasmin, you know, just kind of jumped in there and did it, because that's what it's all about.
Yeah. You got to take that risk. I mean, that's how I look at it. Like, if I hadn't just packed up my cats and moved to Florida, I mean, I wouldn't have this life. I wouldn't have my husband. I wouldn't have my kids. So, I mean, I guess I've always kind of been like that. And I guess I didn't realize it until I started, you know, reflecting, like, wait a minute, like that's pretty much what life is. It's just, you know, you're one decision away from a completely different life and you don't know. And I don't want to be on my deathbed and, you know, like, you know, I wish I had done that, or I wish, you know, things would have been different. Like, no, like, you know what? I got to do everything I wanted to do.
Yes. You and I are very similar in that sense, where when I left for Florida, I left out of nowhere. And even I told a couple friends and my cousin that I was leaving, and they thought I was joking. But I did leave. And I remember when I went to go pick up my little brother, I was leaving, and I remember just being very emotional. And I turned the radio on, and the song that came on was a song by POD called Alive. And once I heard that song, I'm experiencing it right now, but I knew everything was going to be okay. I didn't know what I was going to do, but I knew I needed to get out of the situation that I was in, and that things were going to be different somehow. And a few months later, I ended up starting my dispatching career in Florida. And I've been in law enforcement. I've been public safety ever since. So yeah, it's sometimes that scary leap of faith. But, you know, if you don't do it, you're never going to know. Like you said, you're one choice away, one decision away from having a completely different life. And that is exactly what happened to me as well. I tell my kids too, like, you don't want to be, you know, an old man or an old woman later on wishing that you would have done certain things. I want to be that person later on who's elderly, sitting there looking up at the sky and smiling and laughing to myself, thinking, I did it. I did it. I did it while I had a chance.
You're a legend. Your grandkids will talk about you. Your great grandkids. Yeah.
It's like they wrote a scroll about you.
I know.
Oh, man. This has been awesome to have you on. Thank you so much for taking the time to be on this episode with me. As we go into the wrap up of this episode, I have one last question for you.
Okay.
If you could go back in time and talk to yourself, everything that you know now that you've had for these 13 years, if you could go back and talk to yourself at the beginning of your career, what advice would you give yourself, do you think? I think this was actually one of the questions I asked when we were sitting at that pizza place at the conference a few weeks ago.
Well, I hope you're not comparing notes, because I don't remember what I said, but for my career, I think just, Keep an open mind about everything, because I think a lot of times in your mind, you kind of picture what it should be like, and it's, it's never turns out like that. And I don't know why humans don't, haven't learned that lesson yet, but I think just in my mind, I had an idea of what success looked like. And that's why I was so disappointed for so long. But it took realizing that, you know what, this isn't a failure. This is the opposite of that. This is something I can be successful in a whole different way than I ever imagined. So just keep an open mind about what success looks like.
Awesome. Perfect. Thank you again so much for being on.
This was fun. It went by really fast.
Yes. Yeah, it did. We're just over the hour. It didn't even feel like it. Like, man, we could have been coworkers.
I know, right? I'll take Yasmin's time too.
Yeah, there you go. we'll be recording tomorrow and I'll pop you on.
She's like, oh, no, hey. Right. Like, I forgot to tell you.
One last thing.
I wouldn't do that to her.
this has been really good. Really quick. What other conferences are you going to be at? Where are you going to be presenting?
Oh, presenting? Well, I'm actually not presenting at NENA in Kentucky. I'm really excited because that's my first one, and I actually won a scholarship to go. So it's going to be kind of weird to not be a presenter, but I'm also kind of excited because I can just enjoy it with a different perspective. So yeah. I can't wait to network and meet everyone from the NENA world, because that's, you know, every conference has a different feel to it and different industry partners that show up. So I'm excited. But presenting wise, it'll probably be Navigator in Denver next year. So like for this past one, we paid our own way, did PTO, because, you know, when you present, they pay for your conference session itself. So at least that's covered. But yeah, we're already planning on saving up money and, you know, going to Colorado on our own dime. So that's how much we really believe in it and think it's such a good investment in ourselves.
Amazing. That is awesome. Well, again, thank you so much for being on. This was a lot of fun. And I will be right back here with you in just one second. For everyone who is watching and listening right now, if you have any comments, questions, or you want to be a guest on the show, you can email us. And that's going to be WTTpodcast@gmail.com. Once again, that is WTTpodcast@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter. That is @91podcast. You can like us on Facebook. That is facebook.com/withinthetrenchespodcast. This episode was sponsored by Indigital Rapid Deploy as well as Carbyne. And if you're looking for any bonus content and you want to become a patron and support us, you can check us out. That is patreon.com/WTTpodcast. Shout out to patrons as always. And again, perks for patrons only are audio versions of Open Mic Live as well as the DRT. And we do have some more DRT episodes that are going to be coming up here soon. This can be seen on Facebook, YouTube, as well as Twitter. And you can listen 24/7 on Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, your favorite podcasting app, and withinthetrenches.net. Have a good one, everyone. We'll see you in the next one.
You just listened to a Code 7 Network podcast. If you have any questions or would like to be a guest on the show, send an email to WTTpodcast@gmail.com.